Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and we have Melanie Quant today. She's the Senior Director of Business Development in charge of business processing, outsourcing services, and innovation. She's had stints in-house at LinkedIn. She was a Senior Manager of Talent Acquisition focused on software engineering roles. She's also been at Salesforce as a recruiting manager working on tech and products. And before all of that, she's also worked at an agency, I believe, in recruiting. So just like the full breadth of industry-wide knowledge, but also talent as well. Thanks for coming on the show, Melanie.
Thanks for having me. I'm totally geeked out. I love your show. I've been listening to it now for the past few months and just very honored to be here.
So can you walk us through your career arc, your background? How did you, get started and, up to the present day, like how did you get started with Blind and listening to the podcast and just being part of our community there?
Thank you for the question. So I don't know if this is a, common response from people in the recruiting world, but didn't plan as a little girl to go and grow up and be a recruiter or being in tech. I think the only thing that might have been something early on in my childhood that sparked my curiosity around science was my dad was a physicist. He was from the Air Force. So I spent a lot of time with measurement tools as a little kid. I love measuring things. So fast forward, here I am in the tech world, very data driven. I'm a data nerd. But how I got started was at an agency called Hall Kenyon. I started there back in 1999 and they went public. And they were riding the coattails of the dot-com boom in the Bay Area. For anyone that grew up in the Silicon Valley like I did, I mean, there are gigantic organizations that were popping up and doing so well, HP, Adobe, Oracle. And those were some of our premier clients when I started at Hall Kenyon. And then I had the joy to go work at a company called IT Ascent. And this was a really fun agency. These are like 30-somethings that own this organization. And we were the top vendor to Kaiser, Yahoo, Google. And I had the pleasure of working with Salesforce in 2005, 2006. The head of the PMO came in that Salesforce pretty much went all in on that methodology. And they used my company to staff up their PMO. We did that in a very short amount of time. And it bled into me hiring for IT, development, QA, and data warehouse. Who knew that I was going to have a 16-year career all around helping Salesforce grow and hire me? Because I was all about cloud computing. Like software as a service has always been kind of my focus and bread and butter. And luckily, I think the cloud and hosting model is still on its very strong trajectory. But Salesforce recruited me to come in-house. And so that was a great chance for me to understand recruiting from the inside. That was huge for me. We were a 10,000 person organization when I joined Salesforce in 2014. And I left there in 2021, it was 80,000 employees.
Wow.
Half of that was through M&A and the other half was just straight organic growth. Like I was loving being in-house because I was always a fangirl of hiring for Salesforce for 9 years. I mean, I was at Salesforce for 7 years. Fast forward 2021, yeah, the great resignation, it got me. LinkedIn knocked on my door. I got totally lured away by the beautiful, shiny penny and went into LinkedIn at a really fun time though, because they were hiring at a huge cliff and I helped them achieve 240% year-over-year hiring globally for site engineering. That was exciting. I built a team of 13. What was cool about LinkedIn is I could be very experimental and break some stuff and try brand new things like a re-engagement recruiting approach where we looked at 3 years worth of data and looked at candidates that were near misses in the interview process. And we re-engaged a lot of that talent to do an expedited interview process. And it helped us to reduce time to fill by 2 months on several of these really tough to fill engineering positions and obviously impact time to productivity. And so, that was kind of the best part of being at LinkedIn prior to getting laid off this year is just, I'm really proud of what I got to build and being able to really like try new things. I think Salesforce was at a place where they were kind of coasting. To be honest, over 50% of who they were hiring were referrals.
Now, is that typical for a large tech organization, like a big tech company, where you really have to get like the inside track to even be seen or even make it onto the desk of a hiring manager?
Yeah, I mean, to be real with you, we used to joke around at Salesforce that it was harder to get into Salesforce than Harvard. We were literally hiring 1% of the applicants. And we did something pretty cool back in like, I don't know, 2017-ish, 2018, where we went reckless recruiting. So we were trying to follow the concept of Google where, you know, you put a software engineer job posting out there and it's representative of like 80 jobs. But the reason that you don't put those 80 unique positions up is because over 30% of your applicants are duplicate. So if you're a software engineer looking for work and you see that an organization has like, let's say 40 openings, there are individuals, one in three people that think I'll just apply to all 40 and figure out a way to get in front of the right. Maybe I'll be seen. Maybe it'll increase my chances of getting in. I think referrals is king and it still is today. I mean, I'm hearing some dramatic data in today's situation where a lot of these organizations, large organizations like LinkedIn and whatnot, and even Salesforce are primarily focusing on trying to hire internally only. And only 13% of their roles are getting filled with external talent. And most likely that talent is referred. I think that it's essential that you try to leverage your network to be referred versus just applying to the black hole. Like you got to spend 70% of your effort in more outbound conversations and connections versus just trying to apply.
So yeah, that's a good question. So how did you navigate that? Where I've never worked in-house. I've always been a recruiter outside. And in a way, I always felt like in-house maybe has an advantage because you have that name on there, Coinbase, Salesforce, what have you. But I understand it's also tough because you're competing against Google and Apple and Amazon. So how did you, whether LinkedIn or Salesforce, which are great companies, how did you like get the top talent from other places to bring them aboard?
The storytelling aspect of recruiting is essential. Like everyone's motivated by something different. A couple of years ago, it was easy to get candidates. Let's say you're Coinbase. They were paying senior engineering managers 800K total comp. When Salesforce probably averaged around 300 to 400K. Jack, I feel like what Salesforce did, they knew they weren't paying in the upper percentile. Mm-hmm. So money, we couldn't necessarily compete on money. What we could compete on though, and I love this about Salesforce, is they have this beautiful graph that you can even find online. And it shows you SAP, Oracle, and maybe a couple other of the big tech companies. They're growing in lower than single digit growth year over year. Rapid growth, but like in the CRM space, in the marketing cloud space, Salesforce is growing at double digits. Like the trajectory of seeing where their stock opened up at and where they were over time. If you looked at the 5-year stock growth against all these big companies, we were showing the strength. We were showing like, we were going to be more sticky. We were going to be around longer. So I think that with those candidates, it was selling culture. It was selling the benefits. It was selling the giving back. Like going back to the storytelling piece, it's understanding with a candidate, are you more tied to the purpose? Are you trying to be a good person in this world to make an impact on, giving back or to an organization? And Salesforce does that very, very well. You know, the fact that you can every year get money from your employer to give back to any organization of your choice, that for some people that's actually enough. For others it's the money thing, for the third bucket of people, I think it's knowing that I can come in and solve a problem and be a part of working with these types of clients, Fortune 100 clients. And I think that's the hard part of being an engineer, right? You could go and work at a really cool company like Coinbase and make top dollar, But unfortunately, the crypto world's it's crumbling around them.
Yeah.
You know, like anyone there now is probably like trying to get the hell out of there.
So it sounds like when you say storytelling, you need, if sometimes you can't compete on compensation, you have to compete on something else. And with Salesforce, you were saying, hey, look at our growth trend, so that maybe you're not going to get the same base, but if you stick with us 3, 4, 5, 10 years, you could do really well financially. And, you know, we're here for the long run. And I guess on the other hand, what happens when it's not a good market? How do you sell to get someone to move who's worried? Do I go to a company and let's say then they're going to do a layoff next week? Is it a different strategy, a different storytelling device?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like what's good about Salesforce, regardless of them doing a RIF this year and that being, you know, very public and whatnot, the average tenorship at that company is still much stronger than most companies around them. I think LinkedIn was unique. If we were to shift over to them, I was competing with the FANG every single time on offers. What was really cool though, before I got impacted, was in 2002, the sky was falling for the FANG. The FANG was breaking up. Like, you know, you were seeing some of these organizations, their stock was dramatically dropping. And so all of a sudden, comp was definitely not a problem. To your point though, we're in a different temperature today. Well, I mean, these layoffs have boded pretty well. Microsoft stock is doing fantastic. Facebook stocks, Meta, I like to call them Metaface. Meta's stock is doing fantastic. Like, so these efficiencies that they're making with letting people go is working. So if they're trying to attract talent, again, it's only going to be maybe at best 13% of their open roles being filled externally because they're on these hiring pauses right now. So I don't think they're worried about competing at the moment, but they're still going to be the big companies to go to if people want to get on the AI train. And everyone knows in engineering, I think right now, like if you're not embracing AI, you're going to have a heck of a time in a couple of years to be highly sought after.
As a recruiter, Melody, what do you look for? Let's say it's a software engineer or project manager or product manager. Are there certain qualities for people who are watching now, how they could position themselves so when someone like yourself calls, you know, they could stand out?
Yeah, great question. I think that like today, because there is a sea of talent that people are competing against, and I do have some fun stats if you guys want to, you know, hear some of them on sure. How many jobs are out there, because I loved what you were talking about, Rick, recently about the survey that Blind did around you know, the job market, you know, that the optics on how bad it is. So I will lift us up with some stats actually. But the key skills, I think, is again, going back to the storytelling concept, it's like, can you as a human talk about what your values are? Can you as a human talk about what you have done truly yourself, not your teams, not your company, but what problems did you solve? Can you have the maturity to talk about the lessons learned? I think that those are the things that make a candidate stand out. Like if I were, let's say, a platform engineer, if I could talk about, hey, we tried to go to the cloud and we realized that we had too much technical debt on our product and we couldn't actually quickly do a lift and shift to the cloud because it would just waste a ton of time and we still wouldn't have the controls that we needed on our core code. So walking that company through the idea that you have the process, what is your methodology to determine what pieces of the technology or products should be moved over to public cloud to save us money, to not have to build out those data centers so much. But I mean, I've been in organizations that decided they don't want to go all in after years of investment. And then I've also been in organizations that are still, you know, like a Salesforce that's still hell bent on going 100% public cloud. What they're doing to be smart is creating redundancies. So if you're an engineer, can you think through and can you talk through contingency planning? Can you talk through how it's going to save the company money and how you're going to be able to like suss out the right tools to infuse maybe AI modeling? We're still on the infancy stages around generative AI. And like if an engineer can talk about how they're learning and staying like abreast with some of these new technologies, specifically AI, I would say, you know, that's going to make them stand out. for sure.
So this is really interesting. It sounds to me, whereas let's say 6 months ago, 9 months ago, you know, software developer, software engineer could basically say, hey, I'm great. Here's my coding and hire me. Now it's the same people can't just assume that's the case. They have to be able to really articulate, you know, what they're worth and why they should hire you as opposed to maybe 10 other people who are going for the same role. Is that how it is now?
Completely.
And do they have those, by the way, do they have the skills? Do those people have those communication skills, or do they need to get upskilled and have people like coaching them how to get, you know, how to communicate better?
I highly recommend for anyone that wants to have a super lucrative career in tech, whether you're an engineer to a product manager to an executive, get a career coach. I hooked up with Mike Manowski, exec career coach. He works with Wharton, MBA students, you know, very high level people that are leaders at the TikToks and the Metas and, you know, the Snowflakes of the world today. And he talks about in your job search, you have to have a brand statement. You have to be able to talk about the so what, like, and what's, if I always believe in quantifiable differentiators. Like if you're an engineer and you don't know how to talk about how you built a company's annual recurring revenue or subscription models, or if you're not able to talk about retention and, or, you know, if you're an internal facing engineer building things internally, and you're not able to articulate the problem that that solved, you're not going to do a great job shining against your competition. So anyone who's uncomfortable with, you know, really advocating for themselves and being able to speak very clearly about what they bring to the table to problem solve, and if they're only just relying on these tech skills, it's going to be hard to stand out.
You know, you're so right, because Rick, how many CTOs have we had on the show? And if you notice, they all possess the skills that you're talking about. You know, they have the coding chops, but they all are very articulate. They're great. And you could tell they were mentored or coached because they all say the right thing. They're very, and they come across authentic. So you're right. So the Pete, right, Rick, like the ones on top, you could tell they're good coders, but everything that you just mentioned, Ellie, they have all those soft skills.
And I'm going to say this just to kind of make sure that I'm not giving people heart palpitations about how to become something that they're not. If you're an introvert, you're in a great place. Get really good at asking harder questions. Get really good about being more curious. Get really good at asking, like, and prioritization and fearlessly prioritizing. I mean, every organization is trying to do more with less, right? What does that mean? Less people, less money. All those companies that just did layoffs means that the people that are left over are doing way more work than ever. And so you have to be able to go into a big meeting and be able to talk to these executives to get the buy-in. If you're an engineer and you need a little bit more money so that you can do this AI modeling, you have to be able to clearly explain, these are your options, leader. And if we don't take action, this is what's going to be the impact of that. And if you do take action, this is going to be the impact of that. And I've done a little bit of my hypotheses, you know, analysis on the problem statement we're trying to solve for. And if we were just to do these 20% of the things 80% of the time, I can, you know, give you this predictability around whether it be revenue or savings. If an engineer can start to ask the smart questions with the people around them to gather enough information, I think that's like a perfect display of cross-functional, you know, savviness. And I think that, again, it doesn't mean that you have to be this super extrovert. It's about being able to really like pull out of the people around you and being able to go up to the executives and clearly say, these are our asks. And this is what we could be doing that we're not today, because these are our clear obstacles. And that's the storytelling that I talk about.
And also, I think you started talking about before, for people maybe to start building their network so they could find somebody who works at the company and get a referral, an employee referral, like you're saying, that would be preferable. So they're not paying a recruiter fee, which is not good for me or you, but it is what it is. So it gets to get in there. And that's one of the good, right? That's one of the, I don't want to say tricks or hacks to get on a radar.
Yeah. I mean, the word networking is kind of cringy, right?
I know. Like, that's a bad thing.
People are like, oh, great, I got to go do the thing I don't want to do. If you, instead of doing it when you need a job, it's about, COVID's kind of technically over, right? So if you haven't been going to those tech meetups, if you haven't been going to those tech conferences, just sign up for that. Start, maybe companies are starting to cut budget on travel, but find things in your backyard, find things that you can attend virtually, and then make it a point to make some notes on who you see on the calls or who you're seeing when you're meeting people at the event or who are the speakers at these events, and get out of your comfort zone to connect with those individuals. If you're doing this on a constant basis, it won't be so daunting to do when you actually need a job.
So kind of lay that groundwork and don't wait till like you have to start looking or you're forced to be looking or you're laid off, so that if that happens, you're already prepared, you already made some contacts, you have some irons in the fire, and also that's less stressful because you don't have to start from square one. You already kind of have the wheels in motion, right?
That's right. And have that brand statement. Like if you're not doing your own inventory every year, like what did I learn? How am I learning in my job? How's my job changing? What skills am I gaining in my role? And how am I a lifelong learner? I like the Japanese saying Kaizen, continuous improvement. It's like if you're not able to articulate the impact that you're making and the skills that you're bringing to the table and how you're making people around you better, work on that. And even if you're working today, work on that. And if you're starting to build that network and you're able to kind of like put out a little bit more about that brand statement to the people you reach out to, I even encourage you to find some mentors. You know, I love that, you know, Jack, you're working on building up some career coaching for people. Mm-hmm. People should take advantage of that, because if you have maybe 2 to 3 people that can tell you really, not your friends, not the people you work next to, but people externally that can say, based on what you're telling me you want to achieve, these are some ways that maybe you can get there, or based on your plan to get there, how is the progress going, and hold you accountable for making some movement on skill growth. And you're going to get better and better at the practice is going to help you to articulate your worth a lot more. And if you're starting to do some of these reach outs to the people that are working at these companies that you admire, when they do start to hire again, which they will in the next couple of years, again, you're going to be in a much better place. I talked to you about referrals earlier, like how strong that is and like getting in front of someone, whether it's a recruiter or the hiring manager. Treat it like a tree. If you're not watering it, you're not putting the sun on it, it's not going to grow.
There has been a general tendency among technologists to really rely on their hard skills, right? There's this kind of belief that, oh, my skills speak for themselves. I've worked at XYZ company for how many years? Clearly, I've been working on like bigger and bigger projects and I've scaled. But they have a hard time telling that story, right? Because they don't realize, you know, at an organization, let's say Amazon, I'm going to pick on them for a little bit. There are more than 300,000 corporate employees, right? And so many of them, because it is such a large tech company, they are software engineers. They are product managers. They're at the top of their field. And so there could actually be dozens of Amazon software engineers that you're competing with, right? And they just don't have that insight. Whereas I think Melanie, she's nodding her head because she realized like, yeah, like I have these software engineer recs out and I'm speaking with dozens of software engineers from Amazon, from Google, from Meta.
Right. Yeah, I've got a principal architect out of AWS desperately trying to get out of there. And he's got 3 years with ChatGPT. He's got all the Azure and the GCP. I mean, he's got all of this experience. He doesn't have the ability to perfectly explain what he knows and how he got to where he is.
And that's the missing part, right? Where I think it's a good reminder for our audience, but just like people generally. The hard skills definitely get you on through the door, definitely make sure that you're qualified and you meet the minimum expectations for that recruiter, for that hiring manager, right? But what stands out when you're actually doing the interviews is to what Melanie is saying, that brand story, right? Like, oh gosh, Rick was the engineer that started his own startup that became a product manager at a big tech company. Like that is a great profile because he knows how to work with customers intimately, right? He's built a product roadmap from scratch and not just have you know, someone give it to them to kind of execute, right? And that could be the difference, being able to tell that difference story.
Completely. Like, I love hearing from product managers and different people that were like, I was employed too. I was on this product. Like, because they didn't have all of these different people around them to compartmentalize the process. Like, you literally had to wear multiple hats, and you couldn't complain about it. And you needed to wake up the next day and be so elastic that you're like, oh God, what is this? And I mean, I giggle because, like, I was walking around San Francisco yesterday meeting with a client. I was next to the Salesforce Tower. There's two engineers standing there having a conversation, and they're like, yeah, I do TensorFlow. It's really complicated though. And it's like, these are cool technologies. This is the now. But like, if that guy knows TensorFlow and he knows it's complex, that means other people on the team need to learn it. And that means he needs more money for the company to invest in people to get access, licensed, trained, and for that team to be able to turn a corner with whatever that innovation is. And so, you know, being able to really, truly, instead of the canned star, situational task, action, result, which is a behavioral interview approach, think more like SOAR. What's the situation, the obstacle, the action you took to address the obstacle, and then the result. And then if you want to really be mature in your interview process, talk about, wrap the package back up, and what was the business impact? If you could even do that, that's a huge standout, I would say.
And I think what a lot of people don't recognize is, even if you're not interviewing or not seeking that next role, having that awareness about the impact that you're making cross-functionally within your own team, certainly at your own company, in terms of how you're bringing, you know, how your job contributes to the top line revenue, right? How your job contributes to winning more customers, that can help you build such a great profile for your promotion, right? And having that performance review cycle, oftentimes these hiring managers, these directors, executives, these committees that have to decide through these promotion packets, they're looking for that explanation, right? That demonstrable impact that you've been able to achieve. And so many of these you know, people that are looking for that promotion, they miss that part. And they kind of wonder, like, oh gosh, like, why am I not being recognized, right? And so, like, having that understanding to be able to advocate for yourself is, you know, just pays off even if you decide to stay at your current role.
Yeah, and I understand that there are, you know, cross-cultural things that can be a little bit limiting, right? Like, let's say I'm from a country and from a culture where it's uncomfortable to talk about myself and my achievements, and you use the words we as a crutch, and you're not really fast on your feet with being able to get in front of an executive and have a clear and concise, you know, couple sentences about who you are in the organization and why that's impactful. So some recommendations there for those types of folks and for anyone is to set like maybe like 20 minutes on a Friday reoccurring to work on your brag sheet. Yes. Like, and remember, it's not bragging if it's facts, right? So if you can sit there and invest in yourself and say, what are the cool things I'm learning? How am I helping people around me get better? How am I helping to move the needle on this project or these milestones? How did I deliver? What did that do to impact our customers or our culture or our organization? Now you become a culture catalyst. And the key thing is, even though I'm not at LinkedIn anymore, I still believe you got to get AI working for you, right? If you're not putting your skills on LinkedIn, if you're not asking for endorsements today, if you're not populating what you do at that organization and putting some of those quantifiable differentiators about, hey, we went from, you know, 100,000 users to 1 million users, and we have, you know, X amount of like current instances per minute or whatever it is. I mean, those data points, that'll work for you where people actually start looking for you while you're working. I mean, again, this is how you optimize your value.
I love that tip. And speaking on that note, like, how else can candidates, professionals optimize their value and like seek the best compensation that they deserve, that they should earn? Do you have any advice there?
Oh my God, totally. So I would say, like, number one is, well, on a positive note, before I answer that, there's 200,000 software engineering jobs on LinkedIn today. The bad news is 75% of them want you on site. So the world is changing. I would say that 50% of those might've been open or remote in the past. You know, so there's some good news. There are jobs out there. Even for us in the recruiting world, there's close to 250,000 jobs posted out there on LinkedIn. So, I mean, I'm really positive about that. Now, what could someone do to get really smart about their worth? Use Blind. Blind will tell you a lot. Blind to get the real deal, the rawness of what's going on at companies, which I think is interesting. I mean, when I was leaving LinkedIn with a layoff, we were all feeling pretty burned. And people were sending me text messages with screenshots of things off Blind. Layoffs weren't done. Which groups were getting impacted? Like, where else is next? Like, what's the temperature now that people have been let go? Like, so do your homework and then don't be afraid to ask really tough questions in an interview, but do it in a very smart and pragmatic way. Like, really think through, like, okay, what stage in the interview process am I? If I'm talking to a recruiter, you can be much more transparent about your concerns. That should be your buddy in the process. You know, that's kind of the person that tells you, how do you prepare for the interview? You guys were talking about one of your fun things you're talking about, Rick, was people don't understand their comp packages with all this cool equity and ESPP. Your recruiter should be explaining that to you. I know we were really good at doing that at Salesforce. We had to, because of what Jack was saying, we weren't paying top dollar, but we needed to explain like how the ESPP and how the equity, although it might not be as heavy in the beginning, it would be a more long-term win for that individual.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I really appreciate kind of the inside look from the agency side, from like the early days of like all the different like booms and busts of the tech industry, but also just like very granular, like LinkedIn, Salesforce, how they approach recruiting, how they approach talent development. So thanks for coming on the show, Melanie.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Melanie. You're great. This is awesome.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.